Ladies and gentlemen, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ear and sit back, relax, and listen to this, the latest edition of the Kayak Mainline Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Kelly Blades, and as always, joining me from far away in Canada,
David Johnston. I'm from Toronto.
You've been working on the pipes.
Yeah, I've been working on my come down voice.
That's try that again. Do that again.
David Johnston, come on down.
Oh, nice.
You're the next contestant.
I'm so excited about that. That is great. You are, David, you are in Toronto, Canada.
Yes,
at the moment. Sitting in your living room?
Bedroom.
Bedroom. Yep. I am, in fact, in New Hudson, Michigan, sitting in my bedroom. And we are recording after long-awaited anticipation. Meaning not people were awaiting anticipation, but they were anticipating and waiting along. You get it. Another episode of Kayak Mainline. It's been a while, bud.
You know what number we're at?
I want to say number 11, but I'm shooting.
You are correct. It is number 11.
Number 11.
Yeah.
We have more Kayak Mainline podcasts than that guy from Grizzly Adams had mules. What was his name? Jack. Jack, that was great. He had mules. How did he, by the way, I'm gonna take us already on an aside here. Okay. How did he not luck out? So you get Grizzly Adams running around with a friggin' bear.
Yeah.
And what does he get to hang out with? A mule. And a mule who dies every few episodes. So he's on number 7.
Mm.
That's terrible.
Well, it's not quite as bad as BJ and the bear.
Don't mock the monkey. Don't do that. Why do you have to go there? Because I have a secret dream, and it's not so secret now. I would love to travel around the country in a semi-truck with a monkey. And, in fact, everybody I know who drives a semi, I ask them, do you have a monkey? And they always look dejected and have to say no.
When we were kids, I remember we'd go on big road trips, and we wanted to be truck drivers so bad.
Who's we? Tell us who we.
Well, my brother, my twin brother Murray, and my older brother Scott. So, we're like 9 and 12. And so we'd pull into these truck stops. And I remember one time we got in trouble because we were marching through the truck stop, the three of us. And I don't know where my parents were, but it was the early 80s.
Right.
And so we saw this truck that we thought was the greatest truck ever. And I remember climbing right in the middle of the truck. And the driver came walking out and he's like, "What are you doing?"
Nice.
Yeah.
And how did you explain yourself away? Like, no, don't worry. I want to be a truck driver when I grow up.
We saw the last episode of BJ and the Bear.
Right. So, it's okay.
Yeah.
That was like the 80s version of I stayed at a hotel Holiday Inn Express.
Yeah. We kind of got out of there fast. He wasn't mad or anything, but he's like, "I don't think this is your truck."
And did you play it off like, oh, you're right. Mine's blue. My semi is blue. Well, good talking to you, good buddy. Breaker 19. And I'll see you in the rocking chair.
Oh yeah,
you can't pull that off when you're 9, and yet when you're 9 you think you can.
Yeah
What goes on here? So a lot has happened in the past 6 months.
Yeah, what have you been up to recently?
Oh, criminally, what have I been doing? I have been busier than a one-legged man at an ass-kicking contest.
Really?
Yeah, I've been all over the place. Let's catch you up in the last 6 months. So in the last 6 months, I've done Canucopia, where I saw you.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate in having you visit my little home here in rural Michigan. And yes. Then one of the next big events then I went to Midwest Mountaineering, which was great. And in fact, I saw people at Canucopia and Midwest Mountaineering who both came up to me and said, "Hey, you're Kelly Blades." And I said, "Why, yes, I am." And they both said, "I've been listening to Kayak Mainline and we really like it. When are you guys going to make another episode?"
Well,
what? 6 months later, we're on a biannual schedule at this point. So no, it was really cool to meet some actual people who listen to the show. So fantastic. And then after that, I saw you in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I got to see your home and your family.
Yep.
Which was a rare treat.
Yeah, that was and, MEC Paddle Fest, I think.
You know what the best part about you tell me what the best part about that was.
Hanging out with you.
Swinging udders.
Oh, yeah. That was a great show.
It really was. For those of you kids who listen to the punk music or think you want to get into early 80s punk music, stop by and see the Swingin' Utter show. We got to see that in downtown Toronto. They're a great punk act from the 80s, and you should really take a gander at them.
That was a great show.
It really was a lot of fun.
It was here in Toronto. It was at the historic Horseshoe Tavern.
Yes.
Which is great because you're going to go see this place for $20 show, and there'll be 100 people there. right. had the most. So it's a good yes. small little room.
And I got to watch angry youths who weren't so angry go in and do mosh pitting, as the kids do. Back in my day, it was slam dancing, and nobody helped anybody up.
Well, you know, it's the Canadian way.
To help people up?
Well, you know, we're more polite when we're out in the pit. Or at least the young kids are.
Is there a lot of stories going on?
Yeah, there's a lot of apologizing and back patting. You know, it's okay, buddy.
You're doing fine.
You're doing great out here.
Great. I like the way you kind of shuffled up and bumped into me. Anyway, so that was Toronto, and then had a flurry of Sea Kayak Symposium. So Door County, Great Lake Sea Kayak Symposium, and then Ladies of the Lake. I was out at Salt Lake City in OR or at OR in Salt Lake City.
Mm, how was that?
That was good. Yep. That was a lot of fun. I got to tell you, though, that this whole SUP thing has really found its own voice and then began to scream and run through the streets with it.
Really?
Yeah. So in years past, it has been, you know, just a few booths here and there with these wacky stand-up paddling boards. It was almost dominated by the stand-up paddling.
Really? Where's everybody come from?
You know, I don't know, but I seem to believe that they're sort of reaching this apex. They're going to explode at some point. Mm. And I don't mean explode in a good way, like it'll be a household name. I think it's going to, you know, kind of implode almost onto
it's
itself.
Be like windsurfing of the late 1980s?
Yeah. You know, you see it happen when things rise too quickly. You know, they get very, very popular, and then they just die out. People move on to the next thing. So I don't think that's going to happen with stand-up specifically. I think it'll be around for a long, long time, but I think that everybody's trying to hop on that gravy train with biscuit wheels at this point and cash in. And I think we're going to see a much different landscape with that in 2-3 years.
Oh, like the fly-by-night people who are designing boards who don't really know anything about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Fall away.
But, you know, I mean, we'll see. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. But that was very popular out there. You know, I didn't see a whole heck of a lot of new stuff in the kayaking world coming out.
Really?
But what I did see, and this is a little teaser for you kids, and it is no secret that David and I are both team paddlers for North Waters.
Yes.
They have a new tow rig. For you sea kayaking nerds out there, that is going to blow your mind.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
And I haven't even told you, really.
Yeah, tell me about it.
No.
What?
I can't. Sworn to secrecy. But I have seen it. It's pretty damn cool. And it is really, really, above all else, it is very, very functional. And it has taken every element of care into figuring out what us nerdy sea kayakers need for a tow rig. And I think they've implemented it. It was really, really good. And I'm really proud of the work that they've done. He showed it to me and I was very, very taken aback by it. It was great.
Really? I'm pretty excited about it. I mean,
yeah,
they've certainly, I mean, I'm biased by the whole thing, but I'll say their tow lines that they've got are hands down better than anybody else who's got stuff out on the market.
Well, here's what makes them really good at this. They didn't see a picture of a tow rig and said, oh, we can make that. They asked sea kayakers the questions that need to be asked. You know, when do you tow? Why do you tow? What do you need? How does this work? How does that work? And they asked those questions. They got right answers. And then they did something crazy. They listened to them. So there you go. So, you know, it's been a whirlwind cavalcade tour around the country. And, you know, I just I couldn't be happier with the and here's the thing. I also picked up a new line.
Yeah. Okay.
So now I am an Astral rep.
Really?
So I'm working with Astral, and there are some good people there too.
And what are they? So they've got life jackets. What else do they
do? And shoes.
Ooh.
And the shoes are pretty cool. I like the shoes. And specifically, I like, I've got my pair of Brewers that I wear with my dry suit.
Okay.
So it's like a tennis shoe, but it drains. I'm not going to get too nerdy with it, but it drains very, very well. And it's really good foot protection. So, you know, you can wear it anywhere. And especially now going into the fall months, that the Brewer works out really, really well. I've been very stoked about it. So tell me about your life lately, David. Go.
I was in Nova Scotia, did a road trip with the family for 2 weeks.
Nice. Good.
So that was fun. And I boarded a boat from Christopher Locklear, who's a P&H paddler down there as well. Mm-hmm. And so he gave me a boat for a week. So I paddled around, did some little day trips while we were on vacation, smashed into some rocks.
Nice.
And then after that, I guided a trip up on Lake Superior for a week. So that
when was that? I didn't catch that one.
When was that? Right after. That was first full week of August.
Cool. And
yeah. So there was it was really exciting. So I took a group of guys out and around Michipicoten Island, which is a big island stuck out in the middle of Superior. And mm-hmm. very few people ever get to it. And so we circled around the island. This is our 8 days. So we circled around this island and then we made a 12-mile crossing from the island to the main shore again, and then worked our way back to Wawa. So that was really fun.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's an awesome place up there.
Good. How is Ray?
Oh, he was jealous that I was on the trip and he wasn't.
Of course.
Yeah. So
Ray is fueled with hate.
Yeah, and then the great part about it, so the trip happened and we were all excited and we got back, we made this crossing, and we get back, and then later that day, yeah, Ray showed up because he had a day off. So this is Ray Boucher, the friend who
Ray Boucher, right.
At Naturally Adventures. Well, there was at the great part about Naturally Superior is it's where this place is. It's a paddling school and a bed and breakfast and a outfitter. Anyways, it's got the Michipicoten River that flows in, and the wind blows against that, and you get huge surf in that little area. So this guy's got it. He's a great surf paddler. So he went out and showed me how it was done. One day that we got back, there was about 6 foot surf coming in, and a great day. So of course I swam, which has been a while since I swam.
There are two kinds of kayakers in this world, those yes. who swim and those who lie about it.
Well, I'm upside down, and I thought, I should probably roll up. So then, you know, tried, couldn't do it. I thought, maybe I need to set up first. So then I thought, no, this isn't going to work. So I came after a second time. I swam, and I thought, well, what do I do now? I'm stuck here, and this boat, of course, you know, takes off because the waves just pushed it away. And
right.
I thought, oh, okay, this isn't going like the textbook says it should be. So Ray went, found my boat, and laughed at me, and got back in.
Oh, well, that was kind of him.
Yeah, yeah, he's a sweet boy. Well, it really was just giving him some material to make fun of me with, so.
Well, you don't need to give him any. That's the problem with Ray. So, David Johnston, do we have anything coming up here? Do we have some news? I think people are tired of hearing about our lives. They would like to hear some crazy, crazy news.
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
Here's the first one. Military dolphins with frickin' guns attached to their heads have gone missing in the Black Sea.
They've gone missing.
So military dolphins who had guns attached have gone missing. This was in the Atlantic. And this is, so apparently the Navy, Ukraine Navy, put out an all points bulletin for three dolphins that went missing in the Black Sea.
Hold on.
Yep.
The Ukrainian Navy.
Yep.
I'm not certain they have a Navy.
Don't question this.
Aren't they landlocked?
Well, they can still have a Navy. They rent a port in the earth from somewhere else.
How can you have a Navy if you're landlocked?
They were in the Black Sea. They've got dolphins with lasers.
That's a mulligan is what that is. Somebody said, okay, you're landlocked. You can put some boats here. You get a Navy. What do they do with their time, by the way? They decide they're going to put lasers on dolphins.
No. Lasers are too difficult and too, like, you know, they've just had standard guns.
Ooh, Ukrainia.
Yeah. And anyways, what apparently happened was they were training these three dolphins and some nearby
female dolphins. Well, of course, they have nothing better to do because they're landlocked.
Well, yeah. And the female dolphin swam by and went, gentlemen, oh, gentlemen.
Nice. That's your dolphin, your female dolphin impression.
Well, it more would be like, anyways. So,
that was it. That's all I got.
The newspaper article that was reporting this. Anyways, I found a quote on the article that says, if you're from Justin Craig, who's apparently studies dolphins, that says, if you're planning a family holiday in the Black Sea, it's best to avoid any friendly dolphins, especially if you have knives or pistols strapped, if they have them strapped to their heads. But there's been an update to the article since I originally found it.
No, sure. Because something like this just can't go unnoticed. Like you're floating around and let's take the kids to the Black Sea hanging out. Oh, look, it's a dolphin. Is that a 9mm?
Quick, run.
Now, yeah. See, here, let's talk about this for a second. Here in Detroit, we would not even bat an eye. You know, we could see dolphins and we would think they were silly if they didn't have a 9
that's
on, true. You know, in their blowhole waiting to kill somebody. Proceed.
Well, OK, so the story was out. It spread around and apparently it's turned out to be a hoax.
Oh,
I know.
That's right. Because the Ukrainian the Ukraine is landlocked. Did I not point this out?
Yeah. And see, the reason why I'm reporting it is because I totally bought in on it. I thought this is the greatest story ever. I'm totally saving this for when we have to record.
Uh-huh.
And I totally got disappointed.
No, let's work on the premise that in our world, it could happen.
Oh, and it did happen because right. Then I fell down the little rabbit hole to Wikipedia and
okay.
discovered that both the U.S. and the Soviet had dolphin training programs since the 1960s, where they trained dolphins to find lost naval swimmers and find mines.
Both those things I buy into completely.
Yeah.
Those I get. I've heard of that before. I again, haven't looked into it at all. I couldn't tell you one way or the other if it's true, but I buy into that.
Yeah.
But when you start, like, okay,
gun?
So what I see is a dolphin going along with like a samurai sword sticking out its blowhole.
Okay.
Ready to do battle. And so it's, you know, the sword like goes and, you know, those little, like the Navy SEALs come in on those Zodiacs that are half inflatable.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah. And then the dolphins are trained to go after those and sink them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smash them from the side.
That's where I'm going with that.
Well, so the U.S. shut down their program towards the, apparently they shut it down in the mid 90s, but now I read somewhere that they've started it up again. But anyways.
Right.
The interesting fun fact out of it was that Russia completely closed down their program and sold all their dolphins, especially the ones that were trained to kill,
mm-hmm.
to which country? Iran.
Iran.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. With the Iron Sheik apparently leading up the program.
The Iron Sheik with the camel clutch. You and I are both aficionados of the wrestling world, so that was a good reference right there.
No, I don't think he was from Iran, so I'm
sure. I don't really believe he was, but I mean, he could have been. Who knows? I didn't look. You didn't Wikipedia that, huh? You didn't fall down that rabbit hole?
No.
I'm taking you to Rowdy Roddy Piper, who is a Canadian. Wait a minute. How do they establish that a dolphin is a killer?
I don't know. Like, or even like, how do they train them? And it's like, we need 6 volunteers.
Get right.
The water. You know, I don't like, at what point do you go, this dolphin is successful?
Exactly. This dolphin had killed everybody who tried to train him. By God, man, he's a demon.
So anyways, that's my first story, my build-up excitement, let down at the end. It's the story of my life.
Sounds like it. So, yeah. I mean, that's a fantastic story. You can't beat weapons and dolphins, especially Russian man-killing dolphins.
Right.
No way around that.
No. If there's any tough ones, it'd be Russian.
Exactly. So, you got more news?
Yeah, we do. Let's change gears. Let's do a check-in, an update for an old story from a long time ago.
Is it?
No, it's not the guy in the canoe who shot a boater.
So. Yeah! You said you were going to follow up on that. It has been a year now, man.
Oh, yeah, that guy. No, I haven't heard.
You had me at follow-up, and then you kicked the milk crate from underneath me.
I
was going to change the light bulb of knowledge, and you kicked the milk crate.
I'm known for that. So
I don't want to speak to you.
Apparently, that's fallen through the media cracks, and it's pretty sad. The guy was shot in the bum, too, so there we go.
He really was.
Yeah. Freya Hoffmeister. Let's see what she's been up to lately.
Freya, is she around South America?
She is almost. She's
how long is it going to take this woman?
She's currently on day 581.
That's a long time.
Yeah. That's more than I'm calling this the afternoon expedition.
Yes.
So where's she now? She is on Maracaibo, Venezuela. She just crossed the border between Colombia, Venezuela. About 3 days ago. So let's see. She's currently paddled 14,085 kilometers or 8,750 miles. 8,750 miles.
Wow, that was hard for you to get out. 8,750 something miles. You have a problem with commas, don't you? You have a deep-seated fear about commas.
I was staring at it, and I was trying to read ahead and figure out how many numbers there were.
That's a lot.
Yeah, there were. So, yeah. All right. So she's backing up a bit. So she started originally August 30th, 2011, in Buenos Aires, Argentina. She's
Buenos Aires.
Okay. Buenos Aires. Going around Buenos Aires. You know, like
something. Buenos Aires, right. And Venezuela.
And Argenti.
Argenti. Nah.
I will say Les Nessman would still have a hard time with this whole thing, too. So,
you know, I was the funny you bring that up, because I was actually going to call everybody fellow babies tonight. That's another WKRP in Cincinnati reference. Hello, fellow babies. That's right. So Freya is paddling around Argentina.
Yep. And she's already covered off, you know, the southern end and the top end, Ecuador, Colombia. She went through the Panama Canal.
She's got around a horn yet.
Oh, yeah. She did that long ago.
Long time ago, eh? Arr.
Yeah, I don't know how much longer she's got. Like, it looks to me that she's, maybe miles wise, I'm not sure, but at least staring at the map, she's about two thirds done.
Yeah. I think we've discussed this. Hmm. How do you make that decision? You know what? I've done the small continents. Now it's time to really take on a big continent.
Seriously?
Yeah. Like, I don't have that kind of free time. I can barely find a weekend to take my kids to Cedar Point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And she's paddling around a bigger continent.
Well, what's interesting about this, so here we are, like, coming close to 600 days of paddling, and she took a break of about 6 months in between. So.
So did we.
This is our expedition.
That's right.
Except we're on 11.
Anyway, so she took 6 months off.
Yeah, well, she's taken 6 months off. She's basically paddled two full years of daytime. So it's like, here's 2.5. She's coming close to 3 years on this expedition. Man, I think she's taken another break.
I'd get a little bored.
Yeah, how do you keep going?
I don't know.
Yeah, like I can barely go for an hour if I'm paddling by myself.
Like, yeah, I get a little sleepy.
Well, how do you keep going every single day? Like, so she's caught. There's been people along the way that she's paddled with for some of it. So.
Oh, okay.
But still.
That's awesome. Well, good for her. You know, I'm glad she's doing stuff like that, because we make a little fun, but she's a badass.
Yeah, probably.
And she does stuff that most of us only dream about. And I quite admire and respect her for going out and doing this. A lot of people sit around and plan their dreams out until they're retired. She just makes a plan and goes.
Mm-hmm.
Something to be said for that.
Yeah. Cool. Story number three. Here's what we got.
Number three.
It's a Canadian story.
Oh.
Halifax men brave the North Atlantic to paddle 175 kilometers to Sable Island.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of a cool story. This just happened just about a week ago. So two guys, Jean-Sebastien Lapierre and Graham Carter. Graham Carter, they're in Halifax, obviously, as the title. So they had an idea about 3 years ago to raise money for a kids' camp in Nova Scotia. And so they wanted to raise $25,000. And so they kayaked from Halifax in Nova Scotia out to Sable Island, which is a really cool island. It's 175 kilometers out, or 109 miles.
Nice.
And it's a national park. So you can't really get to it. You have to have permission to go to it, and you need a permit. So not a lot of people get there. There's wild ponies out there. It's all kinds of stuff. So they set that as their goal to paddle out to it. So they're in a double kayak.
And you had me at ponies. I love ponies.
It's the, what do they call it? The Graveyard of the North Atlantic, I believe, is the title for it.
Well, I mean, graveyard and ponies are synonymous.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Right. Because
why do they call it the Graveyard of the North Atlantic?
Well, there's more shipwrecks on this. So it's a long, skinny, it's a shoal that's way out in the middle. So all the boats would used to come across from Europe, and they would have to get around the Sable Island shoal, which is actually much longer because a lot of it is underwater. And they wouldn't see it. They'd smash right into the island. And they've got these maps. Because I just went to Nova Scotia like a month ago, so I know this. Rainy days, you spend times in museums. And yeah, there's just like shipwrecks all over. Like, I mean, the boats aren't there anymore, but there's hundreds of shipwrecks over the years.
So I can't believe that ponies are indigenous.
Well, they're not, but they came... I don't know if they came from shipwrecks. Like, you know, the ship goes down and there was ponies on the in the hull. But it has something to do with that. I forget the whole story.
Okay, because I'm envisioning some prick just leaving some ponies on the island. Like, take that. Let me ask this. Did the kayakers who went across there, did they see ponies?
I don't know, but it was on the press.
I can write them. I will. You know what? Follow up on this one, just like your canoeist getting shot in the butt. Because I want to know, if I paddle all the way out there, I'm going to see a wild pony. That's just how it works.
Yeah, I came all this way for ponies. Right. And all I got was this stupid t-shirt.
Yeah, if I, oh, great. Ooh, the North Atlantic graveyard. I want to see ponies. So that's good. So they raised money. Let's not, you know, ponies aside, they raised $25,000.
Yeah, $25,000. Trip took them 30 hours to do.
Nice.
Yeah. So they just went full steam. They had a safety boat with them.
Cool.
That punted along and they just worked their way out. And none of the articles talk about it really any rough water. So my guess is that it was a pretty calm 24 hour period that they.
Yeah, it's a pretty calm 109-mile paddle.
Yeah. That's quite a haul.
Yeah.
Here I got excited about my 12-mile paddle crossing this couple weeks ago.
Right.
What did they? They sang a lot of songs, mainly Gordon Lightfoot tunes.
You're speculating.
What? No, it was in the thing here.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking.
What they sing? Because here's my thought. I have been saying this for years. Aside from the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, name three more Gordo songs that were popular.
Yeah, I don't know any. But they also sang some Stan Rogers. So the proof here is they sang Stan Rogers and Gordon Lightfoot tunes to keep their spirits high through the night, and Carter with Rogers' ironic Northwest Passage. No, iconic Northwest Passage.
Ironic Northwest Passage. Yeah, ironic because it's not on that side of the damn planet. Nice.
Quickly became the unofficial theme song for the voyage. Which tells me that they actually had an official one.
I can name some Gordon Lightfoot songs.
You're much
better. Can the Canadian? No. No.
Though I told you recently about how at my work we were having a conversation about songs you would never hear a stripper ever strip to.
Yes.
So my input to the whole conversation was Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
It's very true.
Yeah.
That is a really difficult song to strip to, and I've tried. The ship was the pride of although that that's kind of hot, you know. I mean, because I could see a stripper right now dancing to that, doing the pole thing, but
the head just whipping around with
I'm actually doing the head whip thing. When I was singing that, I was doing it. I was doing the head whip, and then all of a sudden it slows down, and then she's got to be naked but emote the ship bell chime till it rang 29 times of the wreck of the Edmund. She's doing the whole scene, the 9-minute scene. Like, it gets so boring that she's pantomiming. She's playing all the parts.
As the whole place clears out.
Except for one shut-in who's still there crying to himself. This is art.
Fitzgerald. And then the guy's like, whoa.
Oh, when it's over, he just stands up and applauds. Oh, and then puts a dollar in her G-string, and she's like, that's the worst 9 minutes of my life. There were costume changes. Sorry, Gordon, if you're listening.
Anyways, nobody could up that.
No. I can't think of one good bad stripper song that beats the Edmund Fitzgerald. All right, so good for them. Yeah. They paddled to Pony Shipwreck Island and made $5,000 for children. Is that about sum it up right there?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, and then they sang Stan Rogers and Gordon Lightfoot, which is cool. That is, how many hours did they say it took them?
30.
30, that's a lot of, that's like three Gordon Lightfoot songs. Or four times singing the Edmund Fitzgerald. And then trip. Anyway, go ahead. One more.
All right. So here's the last one. So we're going to step into some science, and mainly around scientists who are concerned about the war against mosquitoes and the fact that DEET is losing ground.
Good God, man. That's our first defense. They know that our firearms are useless against them.
Yep. Yep. Apparently, and I did not even realize this was a real school until I read the article, that researchers from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
They have that?
Yeah.
Hmm. I think How do they explain the first year
of it is just hand washing.
Well, that's a very, you know, you need to wash your hands and sing happy birthday. That's how long it should take you. By the way, those of you paying attention out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what they're studying mosquitoes and find out that mosquitoes are first deterred by DEET, but then as time goes on, if they live longer than a day or that one squat, then they learn to ignore it. And they still don't understand why DEET works, the chemical, because some people think that it, you know, it burns their little feet. Other people, you know, but what they feel is that they just don't really like the smell, which kind of makes sense.
I don't like the smell.
Yeah.
I don't feel like biting anybody.
But the thing is that there's certain types of mosquitoes that are growing resistant to DEET, and they feel that the genetic changes as time goes on, that they'll become immune to it.
Mm.
So the takeaway message is that it's time to run for the hills if there's a building at the top, so you don't have to go
outside. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that idea. Or stay in a cold climate.
How long do mosquitoes live?
I don't know. Long enough to suck my blood.
Mosquitoes live. Oh, here we go.
Oh, okay.
Mosquitoes typically live for 2 weeks.
No.
Although some adult mosquitoes can survive the winter in a sort of hibernating state, which enables them to survive up to 8 months.
8 months.
Yeah.
So almost as long as it takes us to record a podcast.
Yeah.
Excellent. So to sum up our news today, David, we've got mosquitoes are becoming resistant against DEET. We have got guys singing Stan Rogers tunes for an inordinate amount of time.
Exactly.
Raising a ton of money for children.
Yep. Children.
Children. They're our future.
We got Freya who's paddling for a ton of time.
Right. And then we've got dolphins that were a hoax, but are not a hoax, but then were a hoax, but are still not a hoax.
Yep. And currently living in Iran.
Good. Hey, by the way, and currently living in Iran with the Iron Sheik, right there, callback happened. Hey, did you see recently, I'm kind of freeforming now, the rescue, the waterfall rescue?
I watched that last night.
How'd you feel about that? Tell me about that.
It was pretty phenomenal.
Now, do you realize that is one of my, or two of my friends, but one of my friends, Dave Fasili, did the rescue, and the other fella, Bren Orton, was the rescuee.
Why don't you back up and tell us about it?
Well, if I must. So Demshits, which is the Team Piranha's paddling name. Demshits are some whitewater boaters, steep creekers. They're really good paddlers, and we basically give them a van, and they drive around. And they don't solve mysteries, which they should, but they do run a lot of whitewater. So they were out, and this young fella, Bryn, who is a really nice kid, I met him out at OR, 19 years old, and really good playboater, super good playboater from what I understand. He wanted to learn how to run creeks, so the older boys, Demshits, decide to take him. Well, they get to a drop where it is a little, you know, what, 10, 12 foot waterfall, and then a 60 footer. Yeah. Big, okay. Nice 60 footer. And pretty much it's a point and shoot style thing from what I understand. I mean, it's pushy. So, it's 60 feet, but the only place you can't be is on the left side of the river left, as we call it in the biz.
Right.
So Fasili goes through, he eddies out where he's supposed to. And Bren goes through, who is not a good creek boater yet. I mean, I'm sure he's better than I am, but he's not, as seasoned.
Right.
Where does he end up?
He was on river left.
He was on river left. So he got stuffed onto this rock, and he popped out of his boat and clinged for life on the left side of this.
You can see his white knuckles as he's holding onto this rock.
Yep. And the cool thing is, and you can look this up on the interweb, they both have GoPro cameras, so they edit it together so you can see the rescue from both of their perspectives. So he's hanging there. So Fasili pulls off on river right, and just absolutely miraculous that he can find a spot to get out, throws a huge throw rope over, gets this kid Bren and pulls him across the top of this waterfall. So the kids, at one point, Bren was telling me that his feet were literally off the edge of the waterfall.
Really? I didn't get that part at the end.
Yeah, you really can't see it from where they're at. Right. But in talking and, you know, in having a conversation with him afterwards, he was very thankful he was alive. And so if you get a chance to see it, by all means, do so. Go to Demshits, Demshitz.
Okay.
And you can see it that or see it there or it actually made it on TMZ recently.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I was very impressed to see that. But we have an interview with the Hurricane Riders, which we are going to do right about now.
You can follow us on Twitter at Kayak Mainline. Or if you're old school and like to email, that's kayakmainline@gmail.com. kayakmainline@gmail.com or Twitter feed kayakmainline.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the Kayak Mainline podcast is proud to have, for the very first time ever interviewed on this planet, on this podcast, the Hurricane Riders. We have Kate and we have Marty. Hello, folks.
Hey, man.
Well, good afternoon.
This is the first time we've had a Canadian woman on the show.
Oh, yeah. Breaking barriers all over the place.
Mm-hmm. We like to keep it topical and we like to keep it fresh and international with our ladies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Marty. Marty, how are you?
I'm not a lady, but I'm very pleased to be on the podcast.
I'm very pleased to have you. So you guys are 50%. First of all, how many Hurricane Riders are there?
Well, we're up to 12, and we bumped it up from 6 to 12 within the past, what is it, Kate? 2 months, 3 months?
Yeah, it's been a short period of time, but a long time coming, maybe, hey?
Yeah.
Right on. Okay, so explain to our viewing audience, who are predominantly not English speakers, what the Hurricane Riders are.
Well, the Hurricane Riders are basically a posse that got made up many, many years ago about a bit of a rivalry that was going between Canada and the U.S.
Yeah.
About, you know, pretty much posses and things of that nature.
And when you say posse, you're referring to Rastafarian gangs.
Yeah.
Of the 80s.
You know, Tsunami Rangers comes to mind.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
King Cruz.
Okay.
And we were like, wait a minute. Why don't we just do something? Because Canada's always like second. You know, we're never first. So we're always just second or third country. And we wanted to be number one at something. And we figured, you know, well, let's just conquer the ocean. And that's going to be us.
Wait a minute. So, curling and hockey wasn't enough for you? Because, I mean, you guys are great at curling and hockey. Two of my favorite sports ever.
might
I point out that George St. Pierre is the middleweight MMA UFC champion?
Yeah, from Quebec. So, you know, that blood is strong.
Exactly. You guys got it. You Canadians got it going on.
Yeah, but that's all only if you're talking in places that have lots of snowy conditions and or very cold conditions. You know, curling is something that's actually going on here right now in Victoria where I am, but I mean, it's raining, it's warm. I want to paddle. I want to be on the water.
But here's the deal. I like any sport where you can play it and drink a beer while you're in the Olympics.
There you go. Truth. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, I'm sorry. So, the Hurricane Riders, they're out of Victoria. Is that the deal?
I think we're spread out between Victoria and Vancouver. It originated in Vancouver, and there's sort of been a migration over to Vancouver Island as of late.
Excellent. So, you got all these folks, and you wanted to be number one on the waves. Your guys were better than, you know, the Hurricane Riders, or the Tsunami Rangers. You guys are the Hurricane Riders.
Well,
so... tell me about that. Tell me about why you had so much angst.
It was just that, you know, there was a lot of coast being covered here, and there was no video kind of stuff on the internet. Because when we would go packing, we all had stories about places we had paddles. And you know those epic storms we were in alone, but nobody ever saw us?
Mm-hmm.
Now we were all together, and we're all crazy kayakers. And they're like, wow, imagine if we were on this kind of a wave that far off, and then it'd be filmed, and then we'd edit it, and we'd always be based on imagine if. And then that's how the whole video making and Hurricane Riders became synonymous.
Cool. So who started off as the original core group, the posse, as you called it?
Okay, so the Hurricane Riders, as it were. I mean, I'm a relatively new member. And, you know, as I see it, I started paddling with Rowan and Marty a few years back. And the Hurricane Riders then was a collection of Rowan Gloag, Marty Perry, a guy we like to call Whirlson, Kim Hanalua, and who am I missing, Marty? Oh, right. James Dunderdale and Pavel, whose name last name I can never pronounce.
Okay.
Just mumble.
Marty?
Zopa.
There we go. Zopa. Pavel Zopa.
Do you have to say it? Zopa.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's pretty awesome. I can see where that'd be fun to say.
Yeah, never I'm pretty sure that. It's Ukrainian. Most Ukrainian words, I imagine, are fun to say. So this collection of six individuals, you know, like they, you can find lots of THR videos and whatnot paddling out at Skookumchuck, and people just throwing themselves in sea kayaks out into this big, massive wave. And, you know, people have been doing it for a good amount of time, exploring it in whitewater boats. And I don't know, for me, watching them paddle longboats, sea kayaks, on such a technical and challenging wave, like, I mean, it was inspiring. I was just totally inspired, and I was lucky enough to hang out and get to paddle with these people. And really, for me, THR was all about building excitement, building stoke, and pushing the people that you're paddling with. Pushing the sport.
I find it fascinating that most of the time, at least here in the United States, and correct me if it's not the case in Canada, when we see bonds like this, when we see teams form, they're usually around, and certainly folks your age, we see this focused around the whitewater industry. We see a lot of whitewater boaters getting together. And as I always said, growing up in whitewater, they were a lot like biker gangs. You know, you had your section of the river. You know, you were a gully guy, you were a New River guy, or whatever you were, and you know, that was your core group of guys. But this is fascinating to me because you guys are doing this in sea kayaks, and as far as I know, I haven't heard of anybody, you know, rallying around the sea kayak flag like you guys have, and that's largely due to the demographic is much older. So I find it fascinating that you guys are out there. You're young. You're going to get some. You're getting out in big waves. That's pretty cool.
Heck yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Because I like doing that myself, but I'm usually the only guy out there, and I'm getting stared at.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting point because, you know, traditionally, I started sea kayaking. I started kayaking as a means to make a living. I mean, I always wanted to be a kayaker. I wanted that somehow, but I was commercially guiding for people, you know, in their 50s, who 60s, who wanted to come out and see the whales and camp and whatnot, and there's tons of people who just love to enjoy to get out on flat water and paddle into remote places or places around town. But
so specifically, how did you get into the sport of kayaking?
Gosh, how did I get?
Or should I just pass over it? You can think about it, and I can ask Marty that. What do you?
Well, no, I mean, it really happened all of a sudden. I just, I remember one day seeing this blue perception dancer sitting on a rack.
That's the future of boating right there.
Back when blue that came out.
Perception. It still is. It's so far ahead of the curve.
You have no idea.
Right.
But I remember seeing it, and I had been a canoer as a little kid. We always went out on lakes and spent lots of time at the ocean and when I was a kid. But something about that kayak, I looked at it and I was like, I'm a kayaker. I want to do that. But I wasn't old enough, according to, you know, the powers that be, to kayak yet. So it was something that I had to wait for and I had to, like, you know, be old enough to do.
Wow. How old were you?
I think I was about 12 years old when I actually got into a kayak.
Okay. Nice.
When I was like 8 or 10, they're like, no, canoeing is much more for you. Like, no, I am a kayaker.
Yes. Marty, same question to you, bud. How did you start off kayaking?
Oh, for me, kayaking was basically every sport I would always get into. I would get into with just 100%, be crazy at it, trying to break all the barriers, and then just keep it and then add a new one. So sea kayaking for me was always the, oh, I'll keep that one for later. Like scuba diving and parachuting. Like, oh, I'll do it one day, but not now. And when I decided, when I was like 29, I was like, okay, now's the time. I got some money and I bought a kayak. I bought some gear. I made some gear. And within 3 years, I was just doing crazy stuff. And I had already been through class 5 rapids and storms. I had done everything my first 3 years. So that for me was getting into the sport, was getting in just fully. And I started in winter in Quebec.
Wow.
In January on the in the St. Lawrence River. So I started in rapids in winter solo.
Really?
Good man.
And summer was awesome. Because I was oh, I could go to Toronto. I could paddle to so I was doing these epic, like every trip had to be like 200-300 kilometers and had to be solo and had to be stormy. I started butting it into the, oh, I love the November trips in October. So then I started doing the October, November, Labrador solo expeditions and all that shit. And it was, for me, amazing.
So what's coming up next for you guys? So you guys have a video project you've been working on. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, the push was, well, Canoe Kayak Mag had done a really good workup on us on the Scoop Classifieds, which was a surf invitational event. And they made like series. And there was like there were 4 vids, and we were like, wow, this is really cool. Canoe Kayak's covering us. And when we inaugurated Kim, Kate, Costan, and Nick, Nick is a guy from France, we just videoed like crazy. We were like, ah, video, I'm so excited, let's surf. And we just surfed like hard over 3-4 days. And we did 4 vids out of it. And they're out now. It's called the Push series. So the Push 1, 2, 3, 4. And yeah, I mean, we're just trying to get better, and we're trying to get everybody included in the editing process. So everybody gets their turn, hopefully, to try to dive into the editing.
Well, that's great. So now you guys are kind of, in my head, kind of the, at least the in front of everybody with doing video for really rough water and kind of showing that sea kayaking is more than just kind of paddling across the pond with a tilly hat and an old man beard. Have you guys had to change gear to be in really big rough water? Or have you had to modify stuff?
Well, I mean, if you look at the boats that we're paddling just right off the bat, like part of what's really allowed us to do some of this stuff is some of the innovations in boats. You know, with the Sterling Reflection, for example, like, the whole cockpit is designed like a whitewater boat. You know, your knees are wide. You have lots of buoyancy, lots of stability. And I mean, that was all designed by, you know, whitewater guys like Reg Lake and Sterling and those boys. Like, there's a lot of input from the whitewater community into that boat that has allowed us to do, you know, much bigger and different things than we've ever been able to do. And I guess along with that comes a different set of equipment. Like, Marty, maybe you can speak to some of the mods that you've made on your boats.
Yeah, well, because when we started, we had these boats, which all the Sirocos and then the Romani Surfs, and we're like, wow, these boats are amazing. They're so great. We could go straight on a wave. And when we wanted to start turning, we're like, we can't turn. You have to be like Hercules. It's the equivalent of pushing a refrigerator out of place with a broomstick while sitting on the ground. Mm. We could turn. So we had to cut our hulls, make our boat round like bananas. We had to make our cockpits bomber tight. So when we'd be upside down in a foam pile, we wouldn't get pulled out of our boat. So, you know, we've got super aggressive cockpits short of being strapped in. We use anti-implode shields for like ocean and brake. And
what are those?
Packing equipment.
What are the anti-implode things? What do they do?
That's my boat.
Anti-implode things are kind of, they're also known as overthrusters. It's kind of like a shield that you put underneath your spray skirt at your cockpit.
Okay.
You can also use like a beach ball between your legs. And basically if you get slammed by a big wave, like a big wave comes and just smashes your cockpit or a lot of water force is getting pushed onto your cockpit, it won't blow off. And then you can stay in your boat, because ultimately that's the goal, right? Stay in your boat.
In fact, on our last kayaking trip, our buddy Nick and Delphin got an implosion. And unfortunately, it led to a swim because the cockpit filled up with water. And try to deal with an implosion, a boat full of water, insert near rocks, and it consequently got swallowed water.
Okay.
When you surf a boat that's full of water, it's basically a submarine. So as he was doing the second surf, his mouth was at water level or something.
Really?
So it's just, it was pretty wild to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it sucks. Being a guy that has had implosions, it sucks bad, so I feel for your butt.
Yeah, so I mean, these are all kind of adaptations that we've taken from like rough water boating and whitewater boating.
Rough water paddling. Everybody and their brother seems to be doing it. And why is it popular now compared to 5 years ago?
What was that, rough water paddling?
The way people looked at sea kayaking 5-10 years ago, if you were out in a foot of surf, you were in like stuff that might have been 40 feet over your head. And now people are taking them out, and essentially you guys are treating it as a whitewater boat. So, but lots of people are doing it, which is great because, I mean, I love doing it. But it seems to be really popular. So why has it become so popular compared to even 5 years ago where no one did it?
You know what? A lot of it is inspiration. Because when there's something happening, like a mountain and you want a downhill mountain biking, or you look at a glacier and you see a line, you can ski around. When we look at the ocean and we see these waves come in storms, like, look at those swells. They're 60 feet. They're perfectly green. There's no reason why we can't surf it. That's how I look at the ocean, up until they break on shore. Then it's hell. But like, what kind of skills do you need to do that? Well, you need bomber gear that will never break. You need skills that are very reliable, and you need to be super efficient. You know, people are always saying, like, strong, like, our biggest guy is Castan. He's 6'5". He's huge.
We know Castan all too well.
Yeah. But, you know, a smaller person could do the same thing because, you know, you're lighter in the boat. Everything's relative.
So, I think you hit on a really good topic or a good point there. So far as the gear is concerned, we're making stuff that you would have never dreamed of having 10 years ago, 5 years ago, because guys like you, both of you, you know, the Hurricane Riders, all these guys who are going out into rough stuff, because you're going out there, the market is changing now. So we can justify as manufacturers, we can justify, or all the manufacturers can justify making higher end gear, knowing full well that people are going to utilize it and they're not afraid of paying for a little bit better gear, thus making your jobs easier going out there.
And if you don't look good, don't do it.
Exactly. You got to have everything that matches, you know. That's important. So, okay, guys. So tell me, give me some good war stories here.
Well, for me, it was I would describe it as the day where three things went wrong.
Dun, dun, and, dun.
Just recovered from a broken collarbone, and my shoulder was, like, you know, getting good. So it's mid-August, my first paddle of the summer, and I go to this little rocky island in the middle of rapids, because, you know, in Montreal and the St. Lawrence River, there's a lot of little rapids, big rapids, and a lot of rocks in between. So I was camping there, wrong fuel for the stove, forgot my sleeping mat, and I had to eat oatmeal and cold water and shepherd's pie, made mashed potatoes made with cold water. And it was a huge storm, like classic East Coast, black sky, strong wind, 70 clicks coming from the east, against current. And I was like, that's it, I'm heading home. So 65 kilometers in one day, and it was just bad, little choppy white cap 100% of the water the whole day. And there's a section of the rapids in Montreal, which of the Lachine Rapids, which are called the Lachine Rapids. And you got every classes in there, Big Joe's in there. But on the south of the river, there's a class 5 section that everybody kind of like has heard about. But it's so far offshore, you can't really see it. And long story short, I went too close to an island and I got sucked to it in a highway wide eddy that dropped me into a green wave the size of about 2 or 3 Greyhound buses sideways, parked one in front of each other.
Really?
The waves about 15, 17 foot high, green standing, and it would break every 8 seconds. And I was in a sea kayak, loaded, forced in a current that I could not control with holes that would kill like cars and put the whole family inside. And then, yeah, I got into that wave, and I had to plow through it. And then I got stuck in a class 5 V hole that I couldn't get stuck out of. And once you're in a class 5 V hole and you're kind of nailing it, nothing wrong was happening. It was actually pretty exciting.
Well, so sure.
It was scary, but made me realize that you could actually get through stuff.
And who's this, Marty?
That's my son, Connor.
Hey, Connor, how are you?
Kayaking. Say hi, Connor.
Hi.
Hi. Say hello, America.
Hi. Hey, I'm here. It's Canada.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you guys are all Canadians. I'm feeling a little outnumbered now.
It's like when we won the War of 1812.
It's true, just like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys got to bring that up. You draw it like a pistol, don't you? The War of 1812. That was the last time you had a victory on anything.
We just got such a few little things to hold on to.
Exactly.
So, so what's next for you guys coming up?
Well, we got some video projects up our sleeve coming up.
Okay.
We'll leave you in a little bit of anticipation about that one. We got something big coming up.
And that something big is not specifically Costam.
No, not specifically Costin, although Costin most certainly will be involved.
Oh, man, I miss that guy. Yeah. He was my, for people who don't know, he was my paddling buddy here in Toronto. I still miss him. I
know. Well, we'll just have to get you out here or him out there.
He saved my butt a good many times.
Yeah. I'm happy that I know Costin because the two times I've been to the Golden Gate Symposium with him, he's the only guy who has a helmet that will fit me. But where can people stay abreast of what's going on?
Well, currently, you can find us on our Facebook page, and hopefully soon we will have our brand new website online, so you can keep your eyes out for that one.
What's the address?
Oh, well, hey, before you get to address, may I interject that thehurricaneriders.com just became expired several weeks ago because we wanted to let it expire. And it fortunately got taken up. The name got taken up by a porn site.
Sweet. I'm going to look that up right now.
There are hurricanes happening with a lot of lubrication at that site. So it's not a site you want to go to.
Okay.
So the site that you do or you will want to go to is...
Wait. Hold on, Kate.
That domain
nobody
just got
said
taken.
I don't want to go see that site.
Not at work.
I'm not saying that.
Right. So, but the real, anyway, so I apologize, Kate.
Oh,
go
God.
Ahead and tell us where we can find the real Hurricane Riders.
Right. Well, keeping in mind that we are Canadian,
yes.
You can find us at thehurricaneriders.ca. That website is coming to you soon.
Oh, so keep listening. And you know what? I would be remiss. First of all, I said this now twice, I think. I'm going to say it a third time here. I met you guys out of the Golden Gate Symposium and absolutely had a ball with you guys. It was fun to teach with you, Marty. It was fun to hang out with you, Kate, for sure. And one of the other people that I was very privileged to meet out there was Sterling of Sterling Kayaks. You guys are sort of the unofficial, well, I don't know how to put this. You guys are sort of team paddlers for Sterling, correct?
Correct.
Would that be an accurate? Is everybody a Sterling Kayak team member on the Hurricane Riders?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean like Rowan has been really integral, and Marty has been super integral as well in helping design some of the boats, and have been really supportive of Sterling as well.
Right. So what I'm getting at is now we talked about this in a couple episodes back, and I actually just talked to Sterling's wife yesterday about it. So they're almost back up and running. Sterling Kayaks had a fire in their manufacturing facility, and they're almost back up and running, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
And you guys are going to be there with a vengeance. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to not only Sterling Kayaks and Sterling himself. He was a great guy to hang out with. But let you guys have a cheap plug. Say what you will about Sterling Kayaks, if you could.
Oh, geez. Sterling's awesome. Roe and myself have been getting these crazy trips from him. We go to Lake Tahoe. We go to Cali. We go to San Fran. He brings us to Mendocino. And we just drive around in the truck nonstop, military style. We get to destination, have tons of fun. And now we're traveling. This year we traveled with Kate. And yeah, it's very awesome to be on the team steering.
And the boats are, you're supposed to say something nice about the boats at this point.
Yeah, I got this one.
Good. Thank you, Kate. you were picking up what I was laying down.
You guys are media darlings.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, what I find totally remarkable about Sterling is that he listens to boaters. You know, he listens to what we want and he makes it work. He is a master with fiberglass and glue. That guy, a wizard with it all. And I mean, what he's done with the recommendations that he's been given is create a boat that surfs waves forwards, backwards, turns on a dime. I mean, the stuff that we're able to do with this boat is pretty unbelievable. And what I'm most excited about is the stuff that we don't know how to do with the boat yet.
Well, Kate and Marty, thank you for joining us. I wish we could have had more of the guys in, but you know what? You two are the important ones.
Exactly.
Just don't tell Costin I said that. I don't want to get attacked.
Yeah, no, I would be a little bit scared.
Actually, I'm not afraid of him on dry land. It's on the water that he scares me. So,
well, the water's scared, too.
It is. That's right. Oh, yeah. Kate, Marty, from us at Kayak Mainline Podcast, to you at the Hurricane Riders, thanks for joining us this evening. It was a wonderful time.
Aw, thanks so much, Kelly, David.
Thanks, guys.
That Kate is something else, isn't she?
Phenomenal.
I just love that woman.
Yeah. She's so much fun, too.
She is. I mean, they're all good, but, you know, Kate's tall. I like her because she's tall. So, heck of an interview there.
Well, yeah.
Now, to be fair, you know, we're kind of talking smack right now. We actually recorded that interview back in March, was it?
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
It was like March of 2003.
It was actually before the internet. But we recorded that on Reel to Reel. But it's a good interview, and nonetheless, we wanted to give props to the Hurricane Riders. So glad to have them on, and a fine interview done by, well, you, David.
No, both of us were there.
Well, we were both there, but you did a phenomenal job. So what else you got for us before we sign off on this, the 11th edition of the Kayak Mainline Podcast?
Not too much. What's coming up for you in a couple of weeks?
Wee doggy, what do I got? You know, in thinking about it, I have some ACA stuff to do. Okay. One thing that I'm really fired up about, you know what it is, don't you?
What?
I'm going to be joining you in Canada
to
do my Paddle Canada Level 3 skill certification.
We're pretty excited about that. We got the final pieces all put together now. And so,
what's the date on that?
It's going to be the last week of September, so 25th to 29th, so it's 5 days. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 5 days, sweet. Yes.
Good.
And it's going to, myself, I'm teaching it. My buddy Eric and Eric Hogarth's teaching it. And my buddy Ray Boucher is coming, and he's helping to teach it as well.
So I'm going to be inundated with three out of the seven of my favorite Canadians.
It's going to be so much fun. So we're going to – it's going to take place just north of Toronto in the Georgian Bay area.
You know what? When I drive up there, I'm going to use the entire seat of my truck, but I'm only going to need the edge. That's how much what it's going to be. And my friend Chris, Chris Paulson, is going to come up as
I heard
well.
He's coming. I'm pretty excited. So we're working like mad, getting all the last-minute details sorted out, and it'll be good September.
Are there still spots available for it?
Oh, yeah, totally. So good. Level 3, so it's, how's it described? Kind of an upper intermediate course.
Sure.
Like starting to move into that area. And the real main focus of it is the idea is that you've already got the skills, so let's go out in some rough water and paddle. But it focuses a lot on leadership, expedition behavior, it's camping, but it's a very scenario-driven leadership, so that's kind of the idea around that.
Mm-hmm. Right on. So that's going to be us for September.
Yep.
Well, hey, David, you know, it was a little bit of a little slice of heaven to be back in the saddle with you doing another Kayak Mainline episode, and I really appreciate you taking the time and again, getting back with me on this.
Oh, I'm so excited we're back in action again.
It's so exciting. And kids, we do need some more questions for our question list. We got a lot of them taken care of in past episodes. But if you do want to email us at kayakmainline@gmail.com and ask us some questions or hit us up on Facebook, give us a comment. It has been really, really nice to hear from all of our adoring fans, all 12 of them.
Yeah.
Our adoring fans.
Thanks,
kids. Yeah. And by all means, if you see us at events or shows, do not hesitate in the least to come up and talk to us. I know David seems like this, you know, diva. But he's really not. He's very approachable. And, you know, I not only will I talk to you, but I'll also probably help you wash your car. You know, that's the kind of guy I am. I think that's about the tear-jerking sentiment I want to leave us with. Mm. What do you got, David?
I've got nothing. I'm crying over here.
Are you crying a little bit? Fogging up your glasses?
I can't wait to see you at an event so I can talk to you, too, and get my car washed.
Oh, I will wash that car. All right. I think that does it for Kayak Mainline, episode number 11. Remember, kids, when Pooh and Piglet are walking down the road, do not stop them, for they are Dow.
Is that?
I have no idea. I was looking over. I'm sitting in my bedroom, and my wife has an old Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, and I can come up with something better.
No, I think that's great.
I think that's going to lose people, and it's awesome.